Hi, and welcome to Nick Talk, where we discuss today's trending topics with some of the funniest people in the entertainment industry. Now, please stand by for your host, Nikki James.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Nick Talk. I'm your host, Nikki James, and today I have an amazing actor on my show. This is Mr. Adam Lazar White, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay, so why three names? Adam Lazar White.
Because my mom was one of the early members of the feminist movement in the late 60s when she started in it, and she's a writer, and in the 70s when me and my brother were born and little boys, and she kept her own name, Jane Lazar, and my father is Doug White.
Oh,
Jane and Doug is very, like, very, very plain, but they're cool people.
That's very sweet. Okay, so now to kind of introduce you to everybody, you're an actor, a writer, a teacher, a voiceover-er. I never know how to say that. A husband, a father. And then this is what I was telling everybody that I talked to personally before you came on. I was like, Annie's just a really cool guy. So let's talk a little bit about, let's talk about acting first.
Okay.
So what is it that got you into acting?
Well, I was definitely a kid who did a lot of different things when I was in high school and college. But really, my main two focuses were sports and music. I was a three-sport athlete in high school, and I was recruited to play football and baseball in college. Played football, and I was a musician. And then, like, growing up in New York, I'm not even sure how it happened, but unlike growing up in a lot of other places, I think if you grew up in New York or LA, people being actors or studying acting, it isn't the most, like, unusual thing in the world, right? Like, if you grew up in a small town, it'd be really unusual. But if you're in New York, like, you're going to know somebody who's, like, an actor and a dancer and a singer and stuff like that. And I was always, like, a movie buff, and I was a good mimic, and I like to mess around. I would, tell jokes, tell stories. And these guys were like, you should take this acting class. These two guys that I knew who were actors. And I did. And I had always thought maybe, but I was pretty focused at that time on sports and music and being in school. And, but I took my first acting class, and it was like, I was bit by the bug. Mm-hmm. I think what happened was that it combined a lot of those things for me. Like, being an actor, especially like in class in the theater in New York, it was like you were dealing with words, obviously. Like, you were kind of like a poet and a writer, and you were on your feet, and you were kind of like a dancer having to take on a character, take on a body language. It was very much like sports. Like, when the curtain goes up, that's like when they say play ball. Like, there's no like, hold on, I need a minute.
Yeah.
Athletes and actors, performers really of any kind, like,
it's go time.
Yeah, I thrive on that. I think I thrive on that. And so I liked that part of it too.
How old were you?
I guess I was about 18 or 19.
Okay.
19 maybe. Because it was the summer after freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
I was probably going to be 19. I'm young for my grade. I probably was going to turn 19 in September.
Okay.
And I fell in love with it. And then I went back to school and I auditioned for a play and I got the lead. And I had never really done it before. And they were like, and my advisor was like, you can't do it. I was like, what do you mean I can't do it? He's like, you can't be on the football team playing in the jazz band and doing your schoolwork, you can't do it. So I wasn't able to do it, but I kind of set my mind at that moment that I was probably gonna try.
Yeah.
School. And then I did. I went home to New York, and like I said, luckily being in New York, it was very easy to find a great acting class. I studied with a guy named Terry Schreiber and a woman named Gloria Maddox. Was actually in a showcase and in class with Ed Norton.
Oh, wow.
We were in the same studio, Terry Schreiber Studios, one of the legendary teachers. And I really fell in love with acting. And I got an agent quickly off a showcase. And then I came out to LA and I started working, and it was just kind of like, you know, the rest is history sort of thing.
Nice. Okay, so for the listeners out there, tell us a little bit of the work that you've done.
Well, I guess starting from where I just left off, I came mm-hmm. out, you know, a lot of performing, acting, singing, whatever. People say that it's luck. It is luck, but a lot of it is timing in particular. Mm-hmm. And I happened to arrive in Hollywood in the mid-90s when all of a sudden there were 7 or 8 Black sitcoms on television instead of 1 or 2. And every single soap opera got a Black storyline. And so what do you know? I was Khadijah's boyfriend on Living Single, and I was Holly Robinson's boyfriend on Hang With Mr. Cooper, and I was on In the House, and I was on Martin. And so I did a bunch of those shows. Mm-hmm. And then myself and Shamar Moore came on Young and the Restless about a month apart, and were added to what was already a strong Black storyline with Vicki Rowell, mm-hmm. Tanya Lee Williams, and Christoph St. John, who passed away last year, and tragically. And so it became like this very big Black storyline in soap opera. And Shamar and I were like 24. I think we were about a month apart. And so that was the beginning, the first few years. And then I started doing more primetime television. I did like a lot of Shonda Rhimes shows. I was, more recently, I was on like Lethal Weapon and Criminal Minds. And now I also, back then I was on The Parkers, and I was on Wanda Sykes' first show, which was called, I think it was just called Wanda.
I think it was, yeah.
It was just called Wanda.
Uh-huh.
But she has a new show now with Mike Epps on Netflix called The Upshaws, and I'm playing her boyfriend on that. A bunch of episodes on that, and that'll be coming out this year. And I also started doing more movies. I did a lot of independent films. I started writing too.
Yeah.
I wrote a couple of TV movies.
Yeah.
That won what's called regional Emmys.
So what were those?
So there was a company, a wonderful guy named Jim Friedman, who wanted, this is early, like before it was kind of like cool, before Shonda Rhimes was out and before, long before Panther and 12 Years a Slave and Empire, he wanted to give African-American writers a chance. And he was a TV producer in the Midwest. He started basically a contest for African-American writers. Just each year would have their script adapted. And so I was the lead in the first one, and it was called Just Passing Through. And it was took place in the 60s, right around the March on Washington.
Mm.
And one of those stories where like, I had a brother who was passing for white, which is why it was called Just Passing Through.
Oh.
Two Latin brothers, and one looked more Black like me, and one looked more white like him and had straight hair, played by an actor named Adam, also strangely enough, Adam Gifford, or Adam G. He changed his name later to just Adam G because he was also a singer. He played the other part. And when I got the part, the producer, this guy Jim, told me that the script really needed a lot of help. And would I rewrite it? You know, for compensation and credit and stuff like that, of course. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, because I wanted it to be the best it could be. So I did that. And then because Jim and I had such a great creative collaboration, he basically hired me to do the next two
in
writing as well. And I also starred in the second one. So neither of us thought it was a good idea for me to do 3 in a row. Right. But I did the first two as an actor, and I wrote and produced on all 3 of the first 3. Now the second one was called What Angels Fear. And it starred me and a guy named Greg Lauren,
mm-hmm.
who's no longer an actor, but he's a very famous painter now.
Oh. And
Ralph Lauren's nephew.
What?
Anyway, so it was Just Passing Through and What Angels Fear. That was those TV movies. And then I started doing a lot of independents. I also did Ocean's 13.
Yeah.
And I was on Grey's Anatomy and Scandal and I was also on, what was her other one? Private Practice.
Wow. Yeah, you have a big laundry list of all these things. Do you think that you started booking more jobs as your resume got bigger?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that work begets work, right?
Right.
In any business.
That's right.
But I think I was, like I said, I was kind of lucky in the beginning that I had good timing where I arrived at a moment where there was a need for me in Hollywood that maybe you could say there wasn't as much before.
Yeah.
It wasn't that there hadn't been Black leading men, but there just wasn't as many of them and there wasn't as much work. So guys like, obviously, Denzel and Wesley Snipes,
mm-hmm.
but also like in television, like Blair Underwood, like real trailblazers. There was only, Blair Underwood was the only Black leading man on television in prime time
for years.
Because, you know, Denzel went to movies. He had done something elsewhere in the 80s. And I mean, I don't want anybody to get insulted that like looks me up and after I said this, because probably there was someone else. But, you know, when you think back even to the 90s, like—
That's Eric just what you remember though, isn't it? That's your experience,
Eric LaSalle was on ER.
Mm-hmm.
Richard T. Jones, my friend who I did Forgiveness with, which we won the San Diego Black Film Festival with that movie, which I rewrote and helped produce. He was on Judging Amy, but that's the early 2000s already. You know, and Richard had a great career as a Black man, as a Black leading man, doing the Tyler Perry movies. And, but his break, I think, came playing Angela Bassett's son and Larry Fishburne's, Lawrence Fishburne, it was Larry Fishburne back then, in What's Love Got to Do with It, in the Tina Turner movie. He was the son.
So being like when you started back then and now you're still in the industry, what do you think is the biggest change?
I think that the diversity, and not just for Black people, like the amount of women that are directing in television now,
mm-hmm.
like there's been a sea change. It's a totally different landscape. I think if you talk to women directors, they would tell you it was almost impossible to get a job in the all the way up through the 90s. And now like half the jobs in television are women. And so much so that the DGA is the Directors Guild is like, we're good now, right?
We've met our quota.
Like, we got it. We've done, you know, they're patting themselves on the back and so they should. So you have that, and as a Black person, really Shonda Rhimes was a game changer in television. She opened it up for women and for people of color and for people in the LGBTQ community. She had gay characters, openly gay characters on her shows early, long before people were even using that acronym, you know, and they were just saying gay characters or whatever. And shows, those shows really changed the landscape to the point where now in the last 5 years, 6 years, you see it in commercials even, which is even more, for a long time, was like, you didn't see mixed couples in commercials.
That's right.
And you do now. So I think that that's a huge difference. And for young actors of color or of different sexual identity or preference or whatever, I think, it's a much better world for them now. It's not great, it's not perfect, but it's much better.
Right.
And for women, there's many more roles that are powerful, more complex. They're not only the girlfriend, the wife, the mom.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's a great positive message to send to, you know, that that changes. It's occurring, you know. Sometimes I think a lot of people get drugged down in negativity, and there's still positive things out there. There's celebratory moments that we can celebrate. So I want to talk a little bit about your writing. Okay. So I know that you we were talking earlier about the writing room for NCIS New Orleans.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about that. What does that look like for you right now?
Well, I felt very, very fortunate that I was contacted and asked to submit my samples this year, in particular, because it's an incredible opportunity to work on a franchise show like that.
Do you still get excited when you get like offers?
Of course.
Yeah.
If you ever stop getting excited,
you're not doing it right.
You should do something else.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
No, I was very lucky, very excited, very thrilled to be a part of such a powerful television franchise and to learn on a show like that from the veteran writers who I'm lucky to work with, the showrunners, Jan Nash and Chris Silber, and the executive producer writers, Stephanie Sangupta and Chad Gomez Creasy, and you know, it's just it's an incredibly warm group of people, and I'm learning a lot, and I'm getting to write on it. But just practically, it was really good this year because we couldn't act for 7 or 8 months because of COVID.
Right. Yep.
But writers were working like crazy. Producers were still buying writing. They were still buying scripts. They were still getting television scripts ready for when it was going to be time to shoot again. And so I was very, very fortunate to be working throughout the quarantine doing that. And the other job I was doing was what you mentioned before, my voice work. I narrate books. So
yeah. Did you write before this?
Yeah, I've always written. I actually wrote my first script at the end of college, and it took me a year or so to write it. I never sold it, but I wrote my first script.
Yeah.
And then for the first 10, 15 years while I was acting in Hollywood, I was always writing, but I really was only writing movie scripts. I wasn't writing television.
Okay.
And that's another thing, you know, that you asked what's changed. I was kind of the last generation of actors or people in this business that came in the 90s before cable was a big, you know, before The Sopranos, The Wire, Sex and the City, and 6 Feet Under on HBO. Yeah. Those four shows changed everything, where it was like the biggest shows on television in the 90s were network shows. ER, West Wing, Homicide, NYPD Blue.
Yeah.
And then, of course, sitcoms, you know, like, you know, Friends and Seinfeld and things like that. So once the HBO changed the game, Showtime followed suit. Now you have this whole landscape of cable television. And then right on the heels of that comes streaming. You know, so you have cable basically from, say, 2000 to 2010, 2012. And then streaming kind of starts 2012, 2013. And so television has really changed. All that to go back to, I started writing more television scripts as well, what we call television pilots, meaning a first episode of a new show.
Right.
And those are my samples for television. So if there's a TV job, they get one of my original pilots.
So acting and writing, which, if you had to choose which one you would do, what's your favorite? Like, maybe not choose one in particular, but which one do you like more?
Yes.
Just yes.
Okay. I can't choose. I mean, I think I get more of a thrill, as you might imagine, when I'm acting, because it's like,
yeah,
like playing ball or playing music. It's live and it's happening right now. But I don't get more joy out of it, in the sense that the accomplishment when you finish a script and you've sent it to some people that you trust to read, and they give you some notes or some response, and then you rewrite it and you give it to some other people, and they're like, this is amazing, this is great, or whatever. It's like building a house. You know what I mean? It's a little bit of a longer endeavor. But when you're done, you step back and you look at the house and you're like, I built that house. You know, that's something that I've accomplished. Even if it never saw the light of day, even if you never made the movie or sold the TV show.
Right.
There's something to building something, and writing has that in it. Gives me great joy to do that. The other great thing about writing is you get to play all the characters, right?
Right.
In a scene between you and me, I'm writing the character that I would play, and I'm also writing the
character that I would play.
Yeah. You know, or I'm writing the dad and the son, or the mom and the daughter, the bad guy and the good guy, the serial killer and the hero. You know, I'm like,
takes you through probably different mental, you know, I read something. So I do acting too, not as much as you, but you know, they say every character, it's like it's a new beginning. So it's like when you're writing, I could just imagine like how you must feel going from one character to another character, you know.
Especially as an actor, sometimes when I'm really grooving, writing dialogue in particular, it's just flowing out, you know, like I'm the same way that like a rapper would freestyle or a singer would improvise and sing along with a melody. I'm now in the melody of a character. I'm in the key. I'm in the right key. And I kind of can't go wrong.
Yeah, you're in the zone.
Yeah. And it's a real joy to write in that way. And I also enjoy the collaborative process. Like now I'm writing on a team of writers. It's kind of like that kind of goes back to my team sports days. You know, like I like playing on a team.
Nice.
Acting is always a team sport. People do monologues, but mostly you act with another human being and there's an exchange you know, between you and the other person.
That's right. Yeah. I remember the first time I walked in to my very first acting class. I was a little bit late because I got lost. I was brand new to LA, and I walked in and they were all babbling something and running from one side of the room to the other. And I was like, oh my God, what did I get myself into? Do you remember the first day of your very first acting class?
I think I do. It was with Gloria Maddox at Terry Schreiber Studios, and she led us through some warm-up exercises like that, which were like gibberish and vocal exercises and things that would loosen up your tongue, your lips, the speaking muscles, but also things that would loosen you up emotionally. You know, one of the things they tell you in your very first acting class is, as an actor, you have to be willing to be a fool. Mm-hmm. And what they really mean is, if you're going to play the bad guy, you have to be ugly. If you're going to play the town drunk, you have to be a clown. Yep. If you're going to play the abusive father or the abused guy who gets beat up, you have to be vulnerable. Like, there's vulnerability is a very important part of it, being an actor, in a variety of different ways. Mm-hmm. And so those exercises that make you make a fool of yourself, they kind of break the glass of the propriety that most people live in every day. You know, they're like, doesn't matter what they do. They can be like, I'm a surgeon at Cedars, or I deliver garbage. They live, you know, they live a certain way. They see themselves a certain way. They present themselves in a certain way. And as an actor, you have to break that mold. She also had us, she handed out these dictionaries, and she had us lay on our back and put the dictionaries on our bellies, and she was teaching us how to breathe to support as an actor.
Cool.
Stage, you have to support your voice, and so she was teaching us how to breathe from what is called your diaphragm, which is really your lower stomach. What people would think of as their lower stomach, so that you're not just filling up your chest, but you're filling up in your lower lungs. And so she would have to raise the dictionary on our bellies. I remember that. And we did animal exercises. We had to pick an animal.
What does that look like? What was that? What was your animal? What did you pick?
We were working on a character. You had to pick an animal for that character. Okay. And I was working on Stanley Kowalski from Streetcar Named Desire.
Okay.
Picked a Black Panther.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, yeah.
Roar.
But it was.
Roar. There's a lot of roaring.
it was more about his live movements
and
quiet danger.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, that's
I was terrified. I couldn't believe it. I was like, you know, I went from doing interviews, so like not really acting, but then like she kind of broke it down for me and she was saying, you know, even when you're interviewing, you're kind of putting on that persona of you're Nikki James, the interviewer. And I was like, oh yeah, I've already been acting. So like,
well, everybody acts every day. That's the thing that they also tell you in your first acting class. Like, you act differently with your grandmother than you do with your girlfriend.
Very
true. You act differently with your father than you do with your little brother.
Mm-hmm.
You act differently with your teacher than you do with your football coach, than you do with the guy that you don't like in the lunchroom. Like, from early on in life, you have different parts of yourself that you put out.
Sure, yeah.
And we're all more varied human beings than we like to admit in some mm-hmm. kind, you know, so actors just have to kind of admit it to themselves and decide when they're going to use it.
That's awesome. I really want to get to this too. So, I mean, okay, first let me say, the reason you're so good at all of this acting knowledge is because you do teaching, right?
Yeah. I started teaching many years ago. I was helping a bunch of my peers with auditions.
Yeah.
I was working a lot and, you know, actors always help each other anyway, but I had a number of people who were coming to me and say, hey, help me with this audition. And a number of them were like, you're really good at this. You know, you should start a class. And I was like, I'm busy. I don't have time to start a class. But I started realizing not only that I did have time, I really liked it. I liked teaching at a young age. I liked teaching. And also, even when you're doing okay, as I was in this business, you're like a hired gun as an actor. You don't own anything. As a writer, you do. But I wasn't being produced as a writer. I was writing, but I wasn't being produced as a writer. And my daughter was in the womb. And there was something about knowing I was going to have a child, where I decided I wanted to have something of my own that I owned, and I started the studio.
Nice.
And it was a good thing that I did it, because not only has it become a big part of who I am, and not only have I hopefully helped a lot of other actors coming behind me and peers with their craft, but I think it, you know, like any experience, it has become a part of who I am.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I am a teacher.
Yeah.
Now you get to a certain age and you're like, it's not any more of like, I want to be a, mm-hmm. it's not that you can't still have goals and stuff, but there's certain things once you've done something for 10, 20 years,
mm-hmm.
like, I am that thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's part of who I am. It has shaped me. It has molded me, you know?
Yeah. The experience. So if people want to be coached by you, where might they find you?
So the easiest way is to go to actingtruth.com,
okay.
which is the website for my studio. Obviously, like all other acting studios and all other theater productions, we have been on hold during COVID in terms of live acting classes. But like a lot of other acting teachers, I'm actually more available to more people around the world now because I teach multiple classes on Zoom.
Yeah, online.
And I also have people that teach for me. And then as well, you can also, which you can find on actingtruth.com. You don't have, if anybody's writing this down, you have to write anything else down. I uploaded 10 short 25-minute video lessons several years ago that you can rent or purchase at Vimeo on demand, but you can do it through the website, actingtruth.com. And right now it's free. As for COVID, I just wanted to make them free. So all you have to do is go there and put in the code ACTATHOME and you can watch 10 acting lessons for free.
Oh, wow. So what kind of things do you focus on?
So there's 10 different concepts
mm-hmm.
In those lessons. That are part of, like, if you were in my acting classes and you got my book on acting, which has really only always been available to students, but I'm probably going to get it published this year. I'm talking to a university press about that. I have a book, but I took 10 of the concepts, and in layperson's language, what those concepts are, like if you're not an actor, mm-hmm. they answer the questions of how to be specific in a scene.
Okay.
So, who am I is your character. Like, what's mm-hmm. the character you're playing? If I'm playing some OG gangster who's caught in prison and helping young guys get off of their addictions and stop slinging, and I've turned over a new leaf, that's a very different guy than if I'm playing a prosecutor in Chicago who's prosecuting guys like that. Yep. It's a very different character. So who am I is one of the questions, and that's okay. character. Who am I talking to? That's the relationship. If I'm talking to a beautiful on-camera host, that's very different than if I'm talking to my dad or my grandfather or my old English teacher who I haven't seen in 20 years, or my child. So who am I talking to? That's going to change the scene. Yeah. And then you have other specifics, like where am I? If you're having a conversation with a lover in private, in your home, that's very different than if you're having that exact same conversation in a cafe.
Right.
The where, what are the given circumstances? And so the 10 lessons, each one focuses on a concept like that, character, the given circumstances, behavior. A lot of times people think acting is just doing words, but think about your life. Think about sitting down in the kitchen with your mom. She probably never looks up from what she's doing while she's talking to you. She's making a salad, she's salting the steak, she's defrosting this, she's pouring you a glass of white wine, she's pouring herself a glass of white wine. And maybe once every 10 minutes, she looks over and your eyes meet and you guys giggle because that's the moment that she wanted to connect in that way.
Yeah.
But for the rest of the scene, she's behaving, she's busy.
Yeah.
And you might be sitting at the table, but even then you might be flipping through a Vogue magazine. Well, not anymore. You'd be on your phone. But in the old days, you know what I mean? Like there's something going on, you know, and people do that in scenes or they don't.
Right.
So behavior is another thing. Pathology, even if you're playing like Mother Teresa, mm-hmm. everybody has pathology. That is a disease of the mind, right? Pathology, that's what a pathologist is someone who studies okay. demeanor. So you have to figure out what your character's flaws are. That's really what that's about.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know?
That's really interesting. Yeah, I've never thought about that.
Yeah, people are either, the great actors, they dig into that. Because like if you're heroic, you're heroic because you overcome your fear, not because you don't have fear.
Right.
Right. If you're playing an interesting bad guy, you have charm, humor,
right,
sexuality, all those things that we associate with good character.
Yeah.
And Jack Nicholson is the bad guy in A Few Good Men, or Gary Oldman is a wild killer in The Professional. You know what I mean? Like they have humor and they have charm. And so the pathology is the other side, but you don't want to get only caught up in playing the dark side when you're playing a bad guy and playing a saint when you're playing a good guy. So, so that's another like concept, a lesson that you would get from one of those lessons.
Okay. All right. Well, that's really interesting. I think, you know, when you're so many different actors have different ways that they teach and you know, different things that work for them. And I think, you know, if you're open to listening to everybody, like everyone's different ways, whether you're going to use it or not, it's something that you can pick up on and utilize in some way, you know. So I think that's really
like important. Learning how to cook, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You go eat Italian food, you go eat Cuban food, you go eat Chinese food.
It's not all the same.
It's not all the same. And then you go home and you cook what you want to cook, and you might cook your mother's roast chicken, but your little secret is that you add curry powder.
Yeah.
A little bit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because you really learned to love Indian food when you were living in New York or when you went to Bangladesh or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Same sort of thing, you know what I mean? But a lot of what acting really is about is being really specific to the circumstances and what the writer's giving you. and then bringing your humanity and yourself to it.
Right.
Different techniques on how to get to yourself, because we have a lot of guarded places. Going back to that vulnerability question, like, we don't want to be in a rage, or we don't want to cry and be sorrowful, or we don't want to be ugly in one way or another.
Yeah, you have to allow yourself to.
You have to get there. Yeah, you have to open those doors.
All right, so you are narrating an audiobook on the murder of MLK. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's called, is it called Murder in Memphis? Called Murder in Memphis. And it's really, what it really is kind of like the movie JFK,
mm-hmm.
about the murder of John F. Kennedy,
mm-hmm.
And the Warren Commission, which was put out there as the answer in the 60s by the government and the FBI, of there being a lone killer, Lee Harvey Oswald of JFK. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, the movie JFK kind of shows how that really wasn't possible, and kind of spins the tale of the conspiracy of all the different forces that were behind the death of JFK. This book does the same thing for Martin Luther King, where there was a patsy in the murder of Martin Luther King, James Earl Ray. And it really outlines how it's almost impossible that this guy murdered Martin Luther King on his own. And a lot of people think that J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI during the 40s, 50s, 60s had not only anti-communist and anti-Marxist agendas, but anti-civil rights, they were against the anti-war effort. They were against agitators that were supposed to be liberal or revolutionary. Mm-hmm. And both Robert Kennedy and John Kennedy were on the side of change. And both of them and Martin Luther King, as well as Malcolm X, were all killed. And so the book really outlines from a guy named Mark Lane, who is a well-known writer and researcher, what he thinks really happened, or at least asks the questions. I do a lot of narration of books. This is an interesting book, and it's kind of an honor to read it.
It's really relevant right now, isn't it?
Like, it is.
The movement that's going on right now.
There's a book that I narrated called A Most Beautiful Thing, and it's a documentary right now on Amazon Prime and on Peacock, about these young Black kids who learned to row as a crew team on the west side of Chicago. And we just won an award for the best memoir, because it's the memoir of the kid from Audible. So I'm really proud of that one.
Yay, congratulations.
Yeah, I also narrated James Baldwin's novel. And I narrated, the guy who wrote Our Town is a playwright named Thornton Wilder, and he wrote a kind of a thriller mystery about a family, and I narrated that. And I did all of this narration, not all of it, but I mean, I did a lot of narration during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
My vocal booth right here.
Yeah.
That's where I'm lucky to have. You
know? That's when a lot of people start realizing, like, I've heard so many people that, you know, especially people I invite on my podcast, they're like, oh, I don't know, I don't like the sound of my voice. And I'm like, you'd be surprised how it sounds. Like, just record it and listen to it. And, you know, but you really do have an amazing voice. You have a good voice. I think you should do like a Disney character. I see you as like,
I'll do a Disney character.
I see you as like a Simba.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, yeah, that's what you remind me of.
I'd like to like either the lion or the saber-toothed tiger. Or the funny bear too. That'd be fun.
Oh yeah.
A funny bear in one of those big cartoon movies,
like Brother Bear.
I can't remember which one it was, but that would be fun too.
And you know,
the thing about voice work is you can do whatever, you know what I mean?
You're kind of set free because you're off the camera, so you don't have to worry about it,
right?
So I love doing, like, once I got all my equipment, I just started playing with my voice, and I'm like, no. Like, I started doing all kinds of different things just to hear what it sounds like.
Yeah.
It's great.
I mean, even in commercial voiceover, like, you know, I'll do like a deep baritone sort of, I don't know, like a whiskey or a car, you know, like Lexus coupe, 0 to 60 in 4.2 seconds, you know, like that.
Yeah, yeah. But
the next minute I'll be doing like a local Atlanta, you know, commercial, like fillet of fish for $2.99, I'll take three. You know, it can be like totally different.
I know. Oh, I know. It's so fun. I love voiceover. I actually just writing a children's series, and I want to do an audiobook, but I'm not done with all the books yet. And I don't know if I need to do one book at a time and then an audiobook, but we'll figure that out.
You can attach it, you know, where when people touch the screen and swipe, your voice comes on.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, you should.
Okay, we'll talk about that.
I think Apple Books are the best with that.
I think we'll be in touch about that. All right, let me ask you some silly questions, okay? Okay, well, they're not all silly. Some of them are serious, but I'll start firing them off. Okay. If you want to be successful in the industry, what's your advice? One piece.
Work hard. If you're talking about acting, study. Get the other stuff, take care of itself. You know what I mean? Like your luck, your access, your agency, your ability to meet people. You can always do that part. But if you don't have the chops when you get there, you're not going to be Meryl Streep. You're not going to be Denzel Washington. You're not going to be Daniel Day-Lewis. You're not going to be Emma Stone or Ryan Gosling or whoever it is that you admire. You know, Will Smith is one of the hardest working men you will ever meet in any industry. You know,
I know that's right.
Study your craft, you know?
Yeah, I watch his motivational speeches all the time. What type of acting do you prefer to do and why?
I think my favorite, I mean, I like it all. I mean, one of the great things about acting is it's kind of like you get to do a lot of different things. That's part of the joy of it. But I think if I had to choose, I would say kind of like serious drama, realistic drama, you know.
And why? Why is that? You like the challenge?
What I really love is studying human psychology. And so if it's like, the psychology of a love affair, the psychology of a gangster situation as people jockey for power and make moves. It's not that different than political intrigue in the Senate. And that's not that different from a family dynamic, which is what The Godfather or The Sopranos was about. It was more about family than it was about gangsters.
Right.
And so those kind of very human exchanges that feel universal and feel real to me are very exciting for me to work on. It's not that I don't want to work on a superhero movie.
Right.
I do.
Right.
I'd love to, you know what I mean? But I think that what I would find interesting, and if you look at the best actors in those movies, like Christian Bale in Batman or Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk, what's so great about them is the way they bring humanity.
Yeah. Yeah. They make it real.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so in your opinion, how is filming for TV different than filming for movies? And I don't think I mentioned that you did Young and the Restless for a while. I don't know if we did or not, but
I did briefly when I was talking about me and Shamar and where I got started on the Young and the Restless. I didn't say the Young and the Restless, actually. I think I probably just was talking about Christoph and Tanya Lee Williams, who played my wife, and Vicky Rowell, who played Christoph's wife, and Shamar played Christoph's younger brother, and then I also a mistress, Kuna, who was Miss Puerto Rico. That was a tough assignment. It was terrible.
Oh, just hard work.
But yeah, so the question was...
How is filming for TV different than filming for movies?
Well, one of the main differences is really simple. It's much faster in TV. You have much less time. So you're shooting a 2-hour movie in 2 months of shooting, maybe a month if you're on a fast independent film.
Mm-hmm.
You shoot an hour of a television show in a week.
Hmm.
So the speed means that you do less takes. The camera people and the direction is more of a machine that's kind of rolling and running. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of stepping in and being part of the machine for a week or two and then stepping out. Whereas when you're on somebody's film, you know, if it's somebody's baby, you know what I mean? Somebody's thing, they take a lot of time and they'll do a lot of takes and they'll discuss the characters. Maybe they'll even rehearse with you.
Yeah.
And then you'll try it different ways and you'll do different angles. And the director and the DP might even improvise and be like, you know, it's really cool what's happening with the light right now. Can we move the camera over there? Turn off that light. Let's just put her in the chair. Let's, you know, and so that's a big difference between film and television. But I think that the speed and the attention to detail in film, it's easier for people to do that because they have more.
What do you prefer?
I think I prefer having more time, but it all depends on the people, you know? And that's the other thing. Like, it's really hard to say because you could have an amazing crew and director and acting partners on a TV show and then be on a film that's horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, it's hard to just kind of say, I prefer film or television. I guess all things being equal, if you had more time in film, which when you have a budget, you do. When you don't have a budget, you don't.
Right.
On a micro budget film.
Yeah.
It could be even worse. But I would say, I guess in general, you can be a little bit more creative in film. So I would prefer.
Okay. So I've heard people say that anyone can be an actor or an actress. Do you believe that? Or do you think it takes a specific personality type to be an actor?
I don't think it takes a specific personality type. I also don't think anybody can do it. I think most people could do it okay. That's like saying, can anybody play basketball? Yes. Mm-hmm. Can anybody play basketball in the NBA? I don't think so.
Right.
Can most people, if they work really hard at it, play in high school? Most people, maybe not, but a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on your high school. You know what I mean? So like,
yeah,
how I look at it. I think that acting the way as some people that I just mentioned that I really look up to, Denzel, Meryl Streep, Daniel Day-Lewis, Gary Oldman, Lawrence Fishburne, not anybody can act like that. That's like being like Michael Jordan or Tom Brady.
Right.
Right. Or playing the guitar like Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Anybody can play the guitar, but not everybody can play like Stevie Ray Vaughan. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the thing about acting that anybody can do, if you can remember the words to a song or to a rap, you can remember the words to a script.
Yeah.
You can relax enough in front of a camera.
Yeah.
To just be yourself.
Right.
Listen when the other person's talking. Really listen. And then respond. Even though the lines are already written, respond with the lines. Don't say the lines. Respond to what the person said and how they said it. You're acting.
Yep.
You might not get an award. You know what I mean? You might not get paid $10,000 a week or $100,000 a week or $1 million for a movie. But, you know, but I do think that the main answer to that, the real answer to that, is that there's talent and there's craft. Anybody can learn a craft. Anybody can go to an acting class and learn the basic craft of acting. Not everybody is equally talented. You're born with your talents. And in sports, we say you can't coach speed.
Very nice. That's very good. Okay, you're like
fast,
it.
You're very fast, you know?
Yeah.
My buddy, I say, how fast are you? The fastest guy I ever knew. He said, I'm faster than anybody behind me.
True story. Oh, that's funny. I don't know why, but I just got the image of the bear. Like, there's a saying where it's like, if there's a bear in the woods, you don't have to be the fastest runner in your group. Just don't be the slowest.
That's right.
That's it. Yeah. All right. So in every avenue of work, in every occupation, there are pet peeves. What is your acting pet peeve?
It's probably pretty common. Actors are not supposed to give other actors in the scene with them notes. So when an actor questions or tells you how to do your part, that's no good.
Yeah, because you're basically telling the other person that they're not good enough.
If you really think that the other person is making a mistake or needs help,
Yeah.
There's a protocol, which is you go to the director in private and you say to the director, you know, I really wanted this scene to be really deep and emotional. And I think Nikki is playing it for laughs.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think we all just need to get on the same page, but I don't want her to know that I said anything to you. And a good director will say, absolutely. And then the director would come to you and he'd say, Nikki, how do you see the scene?
Yeah.
And you'd say, oh, well, I think it's really cute. It's kind of the center of the romantic comedy, kind of the comedy side of it. And he said, and if he agreed with me, which he might not, right? He might tell me, no, I'm with Nikki. I think this scene should be funny. But if he didn't, he might say to you, what if I told you I thought it was the most serious scene in the movie? And that this is the base note of the whole movie. This is where we really have to believe that these two people are in love, or none of the rest of the jokes will work.
Mm.
And he should be able, or she should be able to communicate with you.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it came from me initially, he or she would have to agree with me to then go do that. But yeah, it would not be cool if I said to you on set, you're going to play it that way? Why are you playing it like a joke? You should.
Yeah, it kind of puts you against the other person, doesn't it? It kind of like, it already creates a little bit of tension between the actors.
Not your place.
Yeah.
Your job. That's the director's job.
Interesting.
So that's a peeve. It hasn't happened to me a lot. I haven't had it happen to me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
More happens in less professional situations.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're rehearsing in class.
Yeah.
People don't do it professionally. They know.
Right.
Most.
Okay. All right. What else do I have here? Worst experience on set.
I haven't had a lot of bad experiences on set. I really haven't. I've been very.
Do you have a most embarrassing?
Almost embarrassing. I think that the most embarrassing wasn't actually on set. It was on stage. And one of the things when you're on stage is that there's no take two. There's no going back. And it's the classic. I was doing a big play and I went up on my lines. I did not know where I was. I was doing Romeo and Juliet. And
that's huge.
And I was in the middle of a monologue of Mercutio, and the guy playing Romeo was the director, which is an interesting because of what I just said, because he would have to direct you even though he was playing Romeo.
Yeah.
And he was older. He was much older than most people playing Romeo at the time. Wonderful actor, wonderful director named Michael Arabian. And he knew that I forgot where I was, and he fed me what I needed to get back in place. And most good actors, that's what they'll do for you. You know, they know enough about what you need to do and what I need to do and what you need to do and what I need to do to get you back in line to you know, they are your lifeline. That would be the most embarrassing. Although I was pretty embarrassed the first time I had to do like an almost nude scene when I was young on The Young and the Restless.
Yeah.
I was like basically in a jock strap on set, and the girl who was playing my mistress, she was like in pasties and a thong, you know?
Yeah.
And it wasn't that bad because, you know, we were both in shape and it's like being in a bathing suit, basically.
Yeah.
It's not the end of the world, but it's weird enough the first time, you know, that it's a little embarrassing.
And you had all those people around. Like,
yeah, kind of, okay, I'm here. Here we are, it's you and me, we're here together. Let's just focus on each other and, you know.
Did it make this scene difficult to do?
You know, in the end, no. It's more the first 15 minutes, you know, when they're getting set up. Like once you're doing the scene, you're actually focused.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like when you're getting booed as an athlete. If you're focused on the play and what you're doing on the field, you're not thinking about the boos.
Yeah.
Right. The audience is thinking about it. You know, the announcers are thinking about it, but the players are like, I don't hear that.
Yeah. All right. Who's your most favorite actor and actress that you've ever worked with? And then we're going to go maybe that you haven't worked with.
Well, it was definitely a thrill of a lifetime when I did Ocean's 13 and I spent 6 weeks on Al Pacino's hip.
Yeah.
About as good as it got. I learned so much from him, even when we weren't on camera.
He was a cool guy.
Totally cool. Kind of strange in like a, like, you know, these people that have been so famous for so long. It's like, when's the last time Al went out for a quart of milk?
Right.
I mean, like, so they become kind of their own thing. He's a very warm guy, though. Very generous, warm, brilliant guy. Nice. I definitely have had some moments on stage with actors where I'm at, it's kind of like playing your best game, those moments, you know, not necessarily the most famous actors, but having some of your most famous, some of your best moments playing. It's like that moment where you, the greatest shot you ever shot, but it was on the playground.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And
so how about the actor and actress that maybe you haven't worked with? Oh, wait, we have to get to actress. I'm sorry. I rushed you.
The actress that I've worked with. Mm-hmm. I did a scene on Grey's Anatomy with Katherine Heigl. And I think she's a wonderful actress. And there was just something about the work with her and Shonda Wilson, who had less lines, but she was in the scene with me as well. And the guy who played Karev on that show, I can't remember his name. It was a four-person scene. And all three of them were so good.
Wow.
But Katherine Heigl was the main part, and I was playing her oncologist. And she was so good and so present. And she was just really a wonderful actress. And it was just one scene, but
she wowed you, huh?
Yeah, she was really, really good.
That's good. Okay, so maybe actor and actress that you haven't worked with that is your favorite that you love to watch on film or that you'd love to work with.
Well, I mean, you know, there's the guys that I look up to that I've always wanted to work with. Denzel Washington, Lawrence Fishburne, Robert De Niro, Jeff Bridges, Gary Oldman, Daniel Day-Lewis. I'll stop there.
Wow, that's awesome. You just made me think about every single movie with every word that you said there, every actor.
And then Meryl Streep and Viola Davis. I'll stop there for the women I want to work with.
Okay.
I mean, there's so many.
Yeah.
Other people, but I think of those people the way you think of Michael Jordan or you think of, you know.
Yeah.
Baryshnikov.
Right.
The greatest.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What was the most fun?
You know what? I'd love to work with Mark Ruffalo.
Okay. Mark, do you hear that? All right. So the most fun moment in your acting career. Something that sticks out.
That was, I was kind of like working with Al Pacino, but I had a lot of fun working on this small movie called Forgiveness
that
I worked on with Richard T. Jones. And my buddy Eni Clemens produced it. And Hawk Kalfani directed it. And we won the San Diego Film Festival. We won Martha's Vineyard Festival Prize. We won a number of festivals. And acting in that movie, in the scenes that I did with Richard, who's also a good friend of mine. There was a scene where I'm a cop and he's like a minister who's doing something wrong and I'm investigating him. And there are two scenes in particular, one where I come to the church for the first time and I kind of pose as a parishioner.
Okay.
And so I have like a hidden agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a scene with Richard. And then at the end of the movie, when I've arrested him, and he's in the interrogation room. I had a lot of fun in those two scenes with my boy Rich.
Oh, that's awesome.
But you know what? When I did the Temptations miniseries,
okay,
another friend of mine, Charles Malik Whitfield. I played a very colorful character that a lot of people know me from, called Flynn in that miniseries. And he was like the drug dealer that like took the band down, really took David Ruffin down in the story. And during the scenes that I had with Leon, who played David Ruffin, and Charles Malik Whitfield, who played Otis.
Mm-hmm.
That was about as fun as it could get.
Oh, that's awesome.
Really fun character, and it was also great actors.
Right.
Especially with Leon and Malik in the scene where Malik and the other guys come over to Leon, I should say David Ruffin's house, and I'm there. That was fun.
Oh, you did some comedy too, didn't you? We talked about that a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
What was some of the comedy that you did early on?
Well, I loved, like, one of my early jobs, I recurred as Queen Latifah's boyfriend on Living Single. It was like dueling boyfriends. The other boyfriend was a guy named Cress Williams, who now plays Black Lightning.
Oh.
And so we were both vying for Khadijah's attention.
Okay.
And that was a lot of fun. And working on The Parkers with Monique,
mm-hmm.
and that is one of the funniest women you will ever meet.
Really?
Oh, anywhere, anytime.
Like on camera and off camera?
All the time. So just being around Monique was like a joy and hilarious. And she just made me laugh in the scenes. In a good way. You know what I mean? Because I was supposed to be this kind of charming club owner.
Okay.
And so it was okay for me to find her funny. Like that was part of the love affair, right?
Right.
She's entertaining, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the same way like Desi Arnaz would find Lucille Ball funny, you know, and that's
right.
Part of what he loves about her.
Yeah.
That's how I looked at it, you know what I mean? Obviously I wasn't Desi on the show, but I was for a couple of seasons. I was for her.
Yeah. Okay. This is a good question. What one moment while you were working taught you the most as an actor?
What one moment? You know, maybe sometimes it's just about going back to the beginning. I think when I first was on The Young and the Restless, I was, in a subtle way, it was still professional, it was good. It kind of goes back to what you were saying before about can anybody act? But I think I was a little more self-conscious than I should have been of what I was doing.
Mm.
With my voice, with my face, with my mannerisms.
Mm-hmm.
And the great thing about soap operas at that time, or at any time, is that they come on every day. So I started very quickly, within a couple of months, seeing my work on television.
Yeah. And
I started looking at it and saying, that's not like Robert De Niro. That's not like Denzel Washington. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you need to get your stuff together, bro.
Yeah.
So I think that seeing myself on camera a lot in a drama, even though it's a soap opera, and might not be considered, you know, like, oh, the greatest movie of all time, it was still like dramatic acting, high stakes dramatic acting,
mm-hmm.
on what I thought was the best soap opera on television, The Young and the Restless, with the best cast and the best directors and the best cameramen. Like, I really, to this day, believe that we were doing the best work in daytime. And so watching myself on camera in that first year,
mm-hmm.
those first couple of months, I learned a lot
about
how to act on camera as someone who came from the theater in New York. That was something I learned, definitely.
So when did you come to LA?
I graduated from college and I was in New York for like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And in 94, I came and got on those shows that I was just telling you about, Living Single.
Yeah.
And just a few months later, I was on The Young and the Restless.
What did you do in music?
I played guitar and saxophone.
Do you have a band?
I was a guitar player. Yeah, I played in like a funk band in college, and I played in the Harvard Jazz Band. I was a jazz musician too. And then when I came out here, I was in a blues band.
Oh, nice.
Guitar. And I started working a lot as an actor and became busy in that part of the business. And it kind of fell away in terms of playing in bands. I regret that I never recorded the music that I wrote. I've thought actually literally just recently about talking to some of my friends who are musicians and putting some recordings together, but
get back in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that's about all the questions I have for you. I'm just really intrigued with how much you do, and I'm in awe of how much you have on your plate, and you smile throughout your, I mean, you know, the introduction was you're an actor, writer, teacher, father, husband, like there's so many other things, like, you know, as we've gone on that you do. And I'm really impressed. I think people can learn a lot from your classes as well. So I wanted to give that a shout out.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. So where can people find you, in total, maybe with your IG or like your different plugins?
Yeah. So, the website, actingtruth.com for the classes, and as well on IG, Twitter, it's ALW Acting Truth. On Facebook, it's Acting Truth. So for all of the teaching stuff, the moniker is really Acting Truth or ALW Acting Truth. Personally, for my own art as an artist, and on my artist website, there is a page for the teaching also, if you were to go to it. It's just my name, adamlazarwhite.com.
Okay.
And my IG is Real Adam LW.
Okay.
Real simple. And that's pretty much it. My name on Facebook, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not huge on social media. I try to stay engaged.
I know. Gotta stay relevant. I find it hard.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I just don't. Mm-hmm. I do some. You know what I mean? I think the Instagram is more the my favorite. I like the visual element.
Yep.
I look at Twitter more for like what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, like I look at Twitter like on Football Sunday. I look at Twitter for the news.
Yeah.
But I don't really engage on Twitter as much unless, like, I don't know, it's a presidential debate and I'll start retweeting, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you so much, Adam, for hanging out with me for a good couple hours of your day. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
It was wonderful.
Hang out with you.
Yeah, it was really, really fun. And we'll be in contact. And for everybody else out there, thanks for listening. I want to give a big shout out to my sponsor. One of them is SoCal Jet Ski. So Adam, if you are looking for something to do on a weekday or weekend, they're open like all the time. SoCal Jet Skis in Oxnard is my sponsor. So they run out jet skis and boats.
Yeah, so. maybe someday soon. I love it. I was a lifeguard when I was in high school, so I love to swim. I love the ocean.
Oh, nice. I played a lifeguard on TV once.
Yeah, right. I bet.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And that is it for us. So have a great rest of your week, everyone.